Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, July 17, 2017. A deadly cattle raid in Boma State over the weekend.
The attackers first came to the village, burned down the houses and chased away villagers before they came to our cattle camp. I believe strongly that they are Murle because I saw some of them before I was shot.
And South Sudanese refugees in Uganda put a big pressure on resources.
We are working with government and that is allowing us to pursue the environmental-related activities in line with the district development plans.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go to Juba, where the South Sudan National Communication Authority has blocked access to Tamazuj website from South Sudan. The Dutch-founded Radio Tamazuj posted an email statement this past hour, which states, and I quote, "Dear subscribers, we are informing you if you are in South Sudan and could not access our website. Instead, please follow our news via our social media pages on Facebook." The statement tells listeners to tune in to the latest news in Juba Arabic on the radio station's SoundCloud page. The statement also tells South Sudanese to subscribe to its newsletter or to send them their mail via rtz.newsletter@gmail.com. It's not clear why the website was blocked. South Sudan in Focus made several calls to the National Communication Authority, but our calls could not go through. We could not verify other reports that the Sudan Tribune website and other websites have been blocked by the National Communication Authority in South Sudan. The authority was established by the National Communication Act 2012 by Presidential Order No. 24 to regulate all communication activities in South Sudan. Eyewitnesses say more than 30 people were killed and nearly 20 others wounded when cattle raiders attacked a village in Bor North County of Jonglei State over the weekend. Some of the eyewitnesses and local leaders say the attackers also stole 12,000 head of cattle. Deng Gai Deng reports for VOA from Jonglei.
The cattle raiders are suspected of being from neighboring Boma Estate's Pibor area. Maun Gwit was shot in his right leg during the attack. Speaking in Dinka, Gwit says he believes youth from Pibor are behind Saturday's night's attack, which occurred just after herders returned from grazing their cattle in Kolmarek village.
The attackers first came to the village, burned down the houses and chased away villagers before they came to our cattle camp. I believe strongly that they are Murle because I saw some of them before I was shot.
Ayuna Gwinaror, a spokesperson of Greater Bor Youth Union, says local youth tried to defend the camp and prevent the raiders from stealing cattle. He says the fighting continued through Sunday afternoon when the attackers finally left the camp. Gwit says 33 people were killed, including 9 of the cattle raiders.
When the attack came to the area, they killed 24 from our side and we killed 9 from them as evidence. And in these 24, there is 4 women and 3 children. And more are elders who are staying in the area and youth.
Gwit says some villagers are uncounted for.
There is 5 people missing. After now, we didn't confirm if they die or they didn't die. 19 people wounded. And we have 7,000 head of cattle been loaded, and we have 3 children abducted.
Gwit says Bor youth are still pursuing the raiders. In May, Jonglei and Boma estate officials signed a peace agreement that initially ended weeks of attacks and counter-attacks. Dozens of people were killed and thousands of Boma estate residents were displaced. Gwit says he fears the latest attacks will lead to a resumption of the hostilities between the two communities.
This is the beginning of the war again. This is the big violations and we lost a very important people. These are elders, chiefs, youths and educated people also, and children and women, why they kill our people. We will go after where these cattle are, and we will go and find those people who are they kill our people.
Abraham Dengmayan, Director of Administrations and Finance at the Bor State Hospital, says several people who were injured in the attack are being treated at the hospital.
The total number that was brought to the hospital were 21, of which 15 were male and 4 were female, then 2 children. Among these 2 children, one is male, another one is female. So yesterday, on 16, the male child of 6 years passed away in the hospital, and all the rest are still under treatment in Bor State Hospital.
Jonglei State Deputy Governor Agot Alier says President Salva Kiir has been informed about the attack.
This is an organized criminality. It's not just an individual criminality like always claim. This is organized criminality, because if you attack villages in hundreds, this is no longer a normal criminality.
Alier is calling on the national officials to rescue the abducted children, recover the stolen cattle, and track down and arrest the cattle raiders. Simon Gahin, Burma's Minister for Local Government and Law Enforcement, says by phone from Juba that state authorities are investigating the attack.
As a government, we don't have information about this, but we cannot deny, because in April, youths from Bor went and attacked some of the villages at north and west of Burma State. It might be those people, because their people were killed, children and all their cattle were taken. So maybe they are the one taking the revenge.
Gain says state authorities will determine whether it was a revenge attack and will, in his words, take measures against the perpetrators. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
South Sudanese refugees in northern Uganda are mourning today after a family of 4 were struck and killed by lightning in Bidibidi refugee settlement camp over the weekend. An official with the Ugandan police says 3 of the 4 victims were children. Mungume Devs Rakarinj has more for VOA from Kampala.
Yumbe, Northern Uganda District Police Commander Abakari Musio, says the children and their mother were struck by lightning early Saturday morning.
We lost life of 4 people. There's 1 of 4 years, 1 of 5 years, 1 of 6 years, and the eldest person was 26 years. All in one house, that is Grassart House, in Village 4, Block 4, Zone 2 of Bidibidi Refugee Settlement.
Musio says other refugees ran and tried to help the family, but it was too late.
Fire caught the house later, and the person could not be saved. The community tried, but they only managed to get out the dead bodies, the victims, after they had died and even burned.
Musio says lightning also killed a Ugandan woman last month in Yumbe town.
So in the last 1 month, I can say the number now goes to 5, because in the month of June, one person, a female also, within Yumbe town council was struck dead.
He says Ugandan police and maintain workers are working together to comfort the relatives and friends, many of whom are traumatized.
People get scared when such strange things happen to them, but they normally have a fallback position and agree, accept that it has ever happened elsewhere.
Bidibidi Refugee Settlement hosts more than 270,000 South Sudanese refugees. The vast majority of them fled fighting in Yei River State when fighting spread the area a year ago. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
Still in Uganda, the steady influx of South Sudanese refugees has strained the country's natural resources. Deforestation is now a growing problem. Millions of trees have been cut down by the refugees as they try to find a new home in Uganda's Adjumani district. Catherine Nambi has the story for VOA from Kampala.
Over 200,000 South Sudanese refugees have settled in Adjumani district. They have cut down trees for firewood and cleared the land to build settlements. Gaya Charles is Adjumani's natural resources officer.
Close to 11 square kilometers of land has been offered for settling refugees in Adjumani district. And if you calculated the biomass or the tree cover or the number of trees in these 11 square kilometers, is over 15 million trees. But if we concentrated ourselves on the current influx, 10,350 acres of lands have been given to refugees, particularly for their activities. That, if you translated that in terms of probably the number of trees that will be affected, is close to 11 million trees affected.
Stanley Miselani is head of the UN Refugee Agency's office in Adjumani. He says to address the deforestation problem, relief organizations have teamed up with the government of Uganda to find lasting solutions.
We are working with government, and that is allowing us to pursue the environmental-related activities in line with the district development plans. So we are very much on top of environmental control.
Plans include reforestation, tree nurseries have been set up, and refugees are given 10 trees to plant, along with other relief items. Idro Gaetano from Lutheran World Foundation supervises one of the tree nurseries in the Ailo refugee settlement.
We raise seedlings of assorted tree species. We give them out to the local community, including the refugees in the settlement, to plant. And this program is just meant to support the community to plant trees, because with the settlement of the Sudanese refugees in the area, a lot of the land being overused, a lot of trees are cut down. So we thought it wise to raise seedlings and support them so that they are able to plant trees to replace the one they cut.
However, Natural Resources Officer Giaya is afraid most of the tree planting initiatives may not be sustainable. Most of them are temporary projects that can end any time.
The current money that we have, we need to procure seedlings. We give to farmers to plant. But in tree planting, you don't only stop at distributing seedlings. You should be able to take it a step further so that it is established as a forest. The only problem is that most of these activities are projects. 1 year, 2 years, the project ends. But if we had probably a program that establishes a plantation and manages up to about 3 years, when the trees can now be on their own, we shall succeed in replacing these trees.
About $200,000 is needed annually to replace the trees that have been cut down in Adjumani District refugee settlements. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at attacks against humanitarian workers in South Sudan. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
does international assistance help or hurt African communities in the long run?
International assistance helped African countries, especially donor agencies like UNICEF, WHO, in the areas of immunization, pregnant women, and child health development.
Assistance for African countries in the long run, we ought the countries, because it will not make them to be able to fight and stand and be independent.
It doesn't help, because at the long run, they will bring some policies. You must adopt these policies after they give you their assistance. So I don't think it will help African countries.
I don't know so much about international assistance, but I think for a short time it does help, and yes, it does hurt in the long run.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says there's been an increase in the number of violent incidents against aid workers and humanitarian assets. OCHA says 46 cases of attacks were reported in June. Dimo Silva Aurelio has details for VOA from Juba.
UN OCHA says the number of violent incidents against aid workers, lootings and break-ins at humanitarian compounds was up in June in South Sudan, but fortunately no aid workers had to be relocated during the months. In its monthly report released over the weekend, OCHA says it recorded nearly 50 incidents of violence against aid workers in June. Gemma Connell, Deputy Head of Office for UN OCHA in South Sudan, says at least 100 incidents were documented in June which negatively impacted humanitarian workers.
These are incidents that impact on the ability of humanitarian organizations to reach people in need. They vary in type from having difficulties with transferring cash at the airport through to violent attacks against aid workers or the introduction of new paperwork that slows down processes, interference in human resource processes. So there's a wide variety of types of incidents.
Connell says 24 humanitarian compounds, including offices, residences, and warehouses, were broken into across South Sudan in June, resulting in the looting of humanitarian supplies and theft of staff members' personal belongings. She says all aid workers want is for the warring parties to allow free, unhindered access to those in need of aid and to provide safety for all humanitarian workers.
One of the things that really concerned us in this respect in June was the number of incidents that involved violence against either aid workers or aid assets, so compounds, cars, etc. There were 46 incidents in June that involved violence against aid workers and assets, and that's incredibly alarming.
OCHA says 9 out of 14 community volunteers and health workers detained by armed forces in Unity's Gwit County early last month remain in detention. Humanitarian agencies continue to negotiate with authorities for their safe release. In June, OCHA recorded at least 20 incidents of robbery or ambush of humanitarian workers' vehicles that were either en route to deliver humanitarian assistance or were pre-positioning food and other emergency items in remote areas. Connell says such incidents were common in the former Lakes, Western Equatoria, Eastern Equatoria, and Central Equatoria states. She says continuous acts of violence or threats of violence against aid workers curtails the delivery of life-saving assistance to the population affected by conflict.
It does have an impact on our work. It impacts on staff's willingness to go to certain locations and it impacts on managers' decisions that they take. What we're doing constantly, every single day, nearly every single hour, is to engage with the authorities everywhere to try and make sure that they give us the guarantees of safety and security. Now, when I say that, we don't expect one party to give us a safety and security guarantee for an area that's controlled by someone else. No. All that we expect is that for the area that you control, whichever authority you are, that you guarantee aid worker safety and security in that area.
On June 5th, Gemma says aid agencies were forced to suspend a planned food distribution to more than 7,500 vulnerable people in Pibor and Fertet in Jongole because of interference from government soldiers. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Zimbabwe's continuous cash crisis is adding to the nation's list of problems. The government has been pushing to resolve the problem, which has led to long lines of citizens trying to get cash from their banks. From Harare, Kuzayi Zinvashi has details.
It is 6 o'clock in the morning in Zimbabwe's capital, Harare, and some of the residents are waking up to start their day. But some are not in their beds. They've been sleeping all night on pavements so they can be one of the first customers to get cash when banks open. The acute cash crisis that hit the country last year still persists despite government's efforts to curb the situation. Professor Ashok Chakravarti provides guidance and oversight for a project under the executive branch called the Ease of Doing Business Program. It's expected to provide the investment environment within 200 days. He cites one key ingredient of the liquidity crisis, the shortage of US dollars to buy imported goods.
You know, we are a dollarized economy, right? What that implies is that we must have a source of US dollars. So if we don't have a source, a proper source of US dollars, we are inevitably going to be short of cash in the country. So Zimbabwe has no proper source of US dollars. So everybody comes here to take US dollars and go. It's not only Zimbabweans who want the dollars. Everybody wants those dollars from outside as well.
The Zimbabwe government introduced bond notes last November, a surrogate currency trading within the borders of Zimbabwe, but equivalent to the US dollar. In the black markets and some circles, the proxy currency is not trading at par with the US dollar. The dollar is trading at a higher rate. Charlene Vuta is a student at a local university. She explains the trouble she has to go through to get cash.
It has made it difficult to pay my school fees. Sometimes the swipe machines do not work and you spend the whole day there. It delays a lot of stuff. Then expenses have increased. The fact that if I want money from EcoCash, for example, to pay my rent from school, they want 10% of the money that I want to use for rent, which means my mom, if she wants to send $70, they want $7 from that. That means she has to send $77.
EcoCash is Zimbabwe's biggest mobile money service, which allows people to make transactions from their phones without the need for a bank account. The demands for fees from EcoCash agents are not unusual. The only alternative is to seek cash from the booming black market. Edmoka Goro is a dealer.
It's all business. Cash is business nowadays in Zimbabwe. With the fact that we're using bond notes and the US dollar. So it's all business. And for me, I do EcoCash. I take 15% of whatever amount you cash out. For me, it's lucrative because it's business. And there's no cash going around in Zimbabwe.
His customers range from individuals who dread the long lines at the bank to businesses that need the US dollar to restock with imports. While introducing a local currency may be the ultimate solution, economists say it will be met with great resistance. The old Zimbabwean dollar was shelved in 2009 at a time when the country was reaching record-breaking levels of hyperinflation. Chakravarti says one long-term solution would be to adopt the South African rand, since Zimbabwe has strong financial and trade links with its neighbor. The government has been promoting the use of electronic money, but critics say that will not be a success since majority of Zimbabweans are in the informal sector and do not have bank accounts. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashe from Harare.
Rains have broken the worst drought in South Africa in more than a century. There is a bumper harvest of maize on the way, a lot of it destined for other parts of Africa where a billion people eat corn as their staple diet. South African production of other grains and meat is also increasing. Yet, one of the country's major agricultural unions says the future of local commercial farmers remains dire. Darren Taylor has more.
Chris Van Sale is deputy manager of the TLU, representing thousands of South African commercial farmers. Van Sale says their importance to Southern Africa and beyond is underestimated because large-scale farming of food crops and job creation has failed across the region. Foreigners are thus streaming into South Africa.
Approximately 33,000 commercial farmers in South Africa are currently ensuring food security for a population determined by Statistics South Africa to be about 55 million. But if we include the number of foreigners which have crossed our borders, the total number of people in South Africa depending on at least a meal a day is in excess of about 65 million.
In 1994, when South Africa became a democracy, the TLU says there were 65,000 white commercial farmers in the country. Their decrease, says Van Sale, is because they and their workers are under siege, as he describes it.
We've had a huge problem with violent crimes on farms. And in this case, according to the statistics available to us, almost 2,000 farm dwellers have been murdered since January 1990. I have not included the consequences of injury, of loss of limb or the trauma, and I have not included the results of theft, especially stock theft, which is running rife at the moment.
Some political parties in South Africa say white-owned farmland must simply be given to blacks. The Department of Agriculture itself says if white landowners continue abandoning food production, it will fill their absence partly with smallholder black farmers. Fonsale describes this as impractical.
Now, if we think that with the restricted area of high potential agricultural land, we can produce sufficient food for the population as well as for neighboring countries, then I think everybody is in for a surprise, because small-scale farming will not be able to produce the volumes which are required.
The drought was particularly bad in western South Africa, where many ranchers raise beef cattle. Fonsale says the government's support with fodder to prevent farmers slaughtering starving cattle arrived too late. The agricultural department has acknowledged this.
Many of the stock farmers had to drastically reduce their herds, and it will take at least 4 to 5 years before those farmers can again reach the levels of income prior to the drought. Some of the dry land, the maize and corn farmers, could not put a harvest in the soil. That resulted in a total lack of income,
leaving many, says Fonsale, under severe pressure.
Recently, the suicide of a well-known farmer in the Eastern Cape was reported. It was recently reported by a representative of an insurance company that suicide amongst farmers last year has increased by 20%.
Economists estimate South African farmers owe about 160 billion rand, or about $12 billion in debt. Fonsale says many won't be able to afford this. They're leaving the land and placing much of Southern Africa's future food security in jeopardy. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
And that report by Darren Taylor from Johannesburg brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Juba Alish by Ahmed Brema. We have been listening to Ahmed Brema with the song Juba Alish. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Let us know your comments about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also get in touch with us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. We hope you join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.